The Paths to Parenthood podcast is designed to support those needing to use a donor to build their family. I'm Becky, also known as Defining Mum, and I'm also the founder of Paths to Parenthood. I'm the mum to three amazing girls, all thanks to egg donation.
And I'm Hayley King, the founder of All Things Donor Conception. I'm both a donor conceived person and, in a twist of fate, the parent of donor conceived children with my lovely wife.
Our aim is to open up conversations about this incredible route to parenthood, focusing on some of the nuances and complexities that it can bring.
Our hope is to provide different perspectives, information, reflection, and validation as we openly discuss different topics, share stories, and ask you for your input.
We hope you enjoy it. So we're back for the final episode of this series. And this series, we've spoken to people with their lived experience. We've had a bit of a legal lens on donor conception, and a big thank you to TV Edwards for supporting this series of the podcast. But today we wanted to take some time to reflect back on a big event we're on in the year in Paris, with a big European Congress around fertility called ESHRE, or ESHRE as some people call it. We're never quite sure what the pronunciation is. But both Hayley and I were really fortunate to be able to go along this year and experience what is a huge event in the fertility calendar. And I think one that, from a patient perspective, it's not very often you get an insight into. So we wanted to give you a little bit, a look inside, and understand a little bit around what we felt when we attended this huge, and when I say huge, I mean huge, event with thousands of people from the fertility world, from all over the world, in one place. And it was actually at a time in the summer where it was hotter than the sun in Paris, wasn't it, Hayley? But yeah, just tell us a little bit around what your thoughts were, Hayley, from the conference itself.
Yeah, and it was so hot. I think it's what I said. We'll come back to it, but we were actually melting at one point when we were on our way home, weren't we, Becky? But no, I mean, it's an amazing event to go to and super privileged to go. The first one I went to was last year in Amsterdam. And I think similarly in Paris this year, it is huge. And it's so hard to kind of portray to people outside of that world how big it is. It's a huge hall with like literally hundreds of stalls and exhibitions from different businesses, companies, all to do with reproductive medicine. And like I say, Becky and I had the privilege of going again this year, managed to wrangle ourselves some tickets, because that's the other thing, not everybody gets the opportunity to go to these things, as Becky mentioned, whether financially, because the tickets are a lot of money depending on the kind of bracket that you fall into to qualify for tickets. So that's another kind of barrier, I suppose. But yeah, we managed to, like I say, go this year as a group, and we're able to connect with some of the other British kind of patient advocates that were also able to attend. So that was lovely, actually, to do that. But yeah, it's you have people from donor banks, egg and sperm banks, clinics, medical, or every kind of medical kind of appliance you could think of in a lab. Everybody there, and everyone's in really good spirits and obviously trying to showcase, I suppose, the kind of advances in reproductive medicine that they're doing. But I think like what we wanted to kind of get across is that what we'd like to see more of, really, at those kinds of events, because of course the medical side is of course super important, but the patient experience and the kind of that kind of side of it, I think, is probably still quite lacking. I don't know about how you feel about that, Becky.
Definitely. I mean, I've been fortunate to be able to go for the last 3 years now. So in Copenhagen and then Amsterdam and now Paris. And I still remember just walking into that very first one and being quite overwhelmed. And I think one thing I would say, there is a lot of money in those rooms. And I think even though you know that the fertility world is an industry, that's where you really see it's a profit-making industry at the end of the day. And there are certain things, I think, as we've sort of walked around those exhibition halls, Hayley, where we felt a bit icky about certain things.
Yeah.
I remember, I think I've still got a huge bag that kind of talks about how this particular clinic offers closed donors, and it's all over the bag. I think, as you said, that there's a real lack of patient voice, I feel, in that arena. It's very scientific, very research heavy, and all of these things, it's all over the bag. I think I've noticed over the past couple of years there being more of the talks that happen around the exhibition being focused around the patient experience, but they are still quite few and far between. A lot of it is all around the medical advances, but it's a weird mix of feelings, I think, as you walk around there. As someone who's needed to use a donor, and yourself as a donor conceived person, Hayley, it can feel a little bit strange at times, can't it?
Yeah, and it is overwhelming, I would say, in lots of different contexts being overwhelming. But I think it's quite interesting when I've had the opportunity to go up to some of the stands and start having conversations with the staff who are all lovely. And, you know, they're there and they want to represent their business and their organisation as best they can. But it's quite interesting because I think sometimes the questions that maybe I have, say like with the donation side, it could be anything really, but that they're probably not as familiar with the questions that I might be asking from a kind of patient side or from a donor conceived person side with the ethics, maybe. They're maybe more used to having questions come at them about maybe the practicalities of donation or the costs or the logistics or something like that, I think. And a number of times, some of the questions I would ask across all of the different maybe banks, the number of times people would say, oh, I'll just go and get my colleague. Because I think sometimes they're maybe not used to those kinds of questions, which is quite telling. But to be fair, I've always been met with people trying to help answer my questions. Don't always get the answer, but, you know, you get the willingness there. But I would say as a donor-conceived person, you really realise, and as a parent as well, just how commercialised the industry is. I mean, we know it is, but actually you really see it in all colours at exhibitions like that. You That's not to say that it's all bad, in the sense that I think those kinds of events are amazing for connecting with other people. And we'll talk a little bit about that later in the podcast. But you do have some of those really important conversations, whether at the exhibitions themselves or with the people that you meet at the talks, because it can go on to other things, can't they? And I think that can be a real positive of things like ESHRE or ESHRE. We're never quite, like I said, we're never quite sure how to pronounce it, depending on where you're from. But I think in addition to the exhibition hall itself, Becky sort of touched on it there, that there are lots of talks going on around. So they have big, like some huge lecture theatres with hundreds and hundreds of people in them. And if you followed us on Instagram, we would have posted a few of them for you to have seen. But they are literally rows and rows and rows and rows of seats, huge screens, and they have people presenting their research to surveys that have been done. And there are multiple ones of those, Becky, isn't it? It's just not like one or two lecture theatres. There's dozens and dozens.
Oh, there's a whole programme, and we were really pleased to see our friend Sarah Banks there this year, and she managed to get an oral presentation around the patient experiences, which was great to see. So it is starting, but I just think it is really missing that patient lens throughout the whole thing. And like you say, it is quite telling when we go round to stands and people are expecting us to almost be from a fertility clinic or from another provider. And actually we say we have this support platform and we're here on behalf of patients and we want to know more about how you work. And suddenly they're like, oh, okay. And actually seeing people who go, oh yeah, I've never spoken to a donor conceived person before, yet their whole business is making donor conceived people. It blows your mind a little bit. And I think it did. We do ask a lot of questions anyway, don't we, Hayley? But in particular, I remember our talk with a clinic in Cyprus where we actually just last week visited, and that all started with us questioning them about, well, how does this work and what does this mean, and how do you do that, and how do you make sure that's ethical? And that's where we were then invited to go and see for ourselves, which we may talk about at a future date. But it really helps us to be able to be that voice on behalf of those who are needing to use a donor, but then also to donor conceive themselves. But it is it's like we say, it's a massive, huge industry. It is quite overwhelming. But it was really good to see this year they had a whole pre-Congress day focused on donor conception. And Hayley, you were able to get out a day earlier. I couldn't make it because it was Mila's birthday, but you were able to get out a day earlier and spend the day at that pre-Congress. So I'd just love to hear, what did you find from that day that was really focused around donor conception?
Yeah, I only found out about it quite last minute, actually. One of the researchers that I know said, oh, are you aware of this whole day to do with donor conception? And suddenly realised that our Eurostar was I was going to miss it. So managed to get on an earlier one, thanks to the grandparents for stepping up and having the kids so I could get out there. But it was, the actual title of it was Children Conceived Using Donor Gametes, Communication, Experiences and Psychological Aspects of Knowing One's Genetic Background. It's quite a long title, but essentially it was a whole day where they collated researchers to talk about recent studies that they had done, whether it was around disclosure, the impact of direct-to-consumer DNA testing. But what was also interesting is they combined the lived experience. So they also had two amazing speakers actually from Norway, a donor-conceived adult and also a parent through donor conception. So it was a whole day in one of these lecture theatres, and one of the smaller ones, but granted, but there were still, I would say, maybe 150 people there listening to this presentation, you know, the series of presentations. And what was really great about it is after each presentation, the researcher or the person that had given the talk was available for quite an extensive Q&A session. So people would get up, and it was kind of just an experience to just get up there and ask questions. Mm-hmm. You would then have the audience of those attending, they could respond and get up. And it was just a really interactive day and such a worthwhile experience. I feel very grateful that I was able to go. And interestingly, it was mostly, I would say, psychologists, counselors that were there, which kind of seems a bit of a kind of, I don't know, those are the kind of people that were probably already know about some of the things that were discussed there. There were clinicians. So there were some kind of donor coordinator nurses there. Some doctors, which was great to see. I would say that was as far as it went. And like I say, one of the great things that I would love to see is kind of more clinic staff or kind of the maybe people that are more involved with the medical side actually mm-hmm. going along to those days, because I think it'd be really valuable. But yeah, it was a great experience. And I went along with my little microphone, did the whole kind of
podcast on tour.
I did, yes. So I was kind of like, right, I'm going to take advantage of this. So I was really fortunate. So we had three amazing researchers who I've kind of read their research over the years, and they presented during the day. So I'll introduce them properly in a minute, but Sophie, Vasanti and Astrid, you've probably read their papers if you're into research and donor conception, but I was able to ask them some questions related to donor conception, how they felt about ESHRA itself and any kind of thoughts they had or things that they wanted to share with our community. So yeah, we were going to kind of share those with you, and we thought maybe we'll try and do it in a podcast, Becky, wasn't it? This is the grand plan anyway. So we'll
that
see
is
how
the plan. Yes. I think just to say, but obviously because you were in a big auditorium and there was lots of background noise going on, the audio isn't quite as crisp as we are right now, but no. You can make out what they're saying. And it's just really interesting to hear from those people who have worked in this research, but actually some for a number of years now, talking about the issue. I think it's helpful for us to know that the research is still happening and that it is hopefully guiding practices as we move forward within donor conception. So yeah, Hayley, who do you want to share first?
Yeah, so the first researcher is a lady called Dr. Sophie Zardeh, who is from the University of Sussex. Now, we have mentioned some of her research before. She did the young adult study, which is an amazing piece of research focused in the UK of the experience of young donor conceived people. So it was great to actually finally meet her in person, and actually I have met her before, but not ever really had a chance to properly speak to her. So that was amazing. So yeah, so this is the first clip from Sophie. And I just asked her a little bit about how she was finding ESHRA actually, and how she felt the kind of the day had gone, and also the conference and her thoughts in general. So yeah, let's have a little listen to Sophie now about her thoughts on that one.
Yesterday we had a really good pre-congress session on disclosure mainly, and I have to say I was a bit apprehensive beforehand, because I kind of felt that we've answered a lot of those questions and we know that disclosure is in the best interest of children, but I felt that we moved the conversation forward, so it was actually really interesting.
And explain, just for those that might not be familiar with this type of conference, there's people from all over the world here, aren't they?
Amazing. Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. So the UK has a lot of work to do in many respects with regards to donor conception, but in many ways it's quite forward thinking. And what we learn by coming to places like ESHRA is that there's such a great kind of variability in terms of the laws around donor conception, how different clinicians think and feel about donor conception, how different counsellors behave, and so on and so forth. So you get a lot of a mix, and lots of like different mix of disciplines as well. So as I said, clinical professionals, embryologists, geneticists, counsellors, psychologists, yeah, everybody kind of comes together who has an interest in human reproduction.
So that was really great to listen to Sophie, I think, and just a little bit about her reflections on ESHRA itself and around how some of the conversations are progressing within donor conception. And interestingly, we're going to hear from Astrid, Dr. Astrid Ndenku, who's from Belgium. Astrid, if you're listening, I'm not sure if I've pronounced your surname correctly, so apologies if I've missaid it. But Astrid, again, is a really experienced researcher. And it was the first time I was able to meet Astrid at ESHRE itself. Like I say, she's done a lot of work in Europe and internationally on the topic of donor conception. And bear in mind, I hadn't really spoken much to Astrid during the day. And this is what she had to say, actually, around not so much ESHRE itself, but some of the things that she would might maybe like to see more of at the conference.
Can you say something about the concern I have about ESHRE as well?
Go for it.
It's when I look at the whole program, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's actually only two sessions about psychology. And I think it feels like this field is so complex and so difficult for people. And when you are entering in the field of your fertility journey, so many decisions to make. And then we have so little attention for psychological aspects. So that, I think, would be my dream, to make that part bigger again, more present.
So I think Astrid had similar thoughts to us, just in terms of the need for more reflection around the psychology surrounding donor conception, but also wider fertility treatment as well. So that it was really interesting just to hear her reflections and to know it's not just us feeling that way.
Exactly, yeah. And the next ESHRE is actually in London. And it'll be interesting to see if there are more sort of the psychosocial support elements based at London ESHRE. I think especially with donor conception in the UK, as one of the researchers mentioned earlier, we are kind of more advanced in some respects, but then there's still lots of work to do. But yeah, I'm really interested to see actually moving forward for London, whether that will kind of increase, mm-hmm. Which is highlighted from Astrid there. So the other part actually of being able to speak with the wonderful researchers was I took the opportunity to ask them about if they had any advice, I think, just because we obviously, there's lots of information out there on the internet now, thankfully more research, but also lots of people talking about their experiences. So I asked them actually what they felt they would like to share with our community of mostly parents through donor conception, if they had any advice or one thing that they would like to share with everybody. So yeah, let's have a little listen too. So this is Professor Vasanti Jadhva. So if you follow the work we do on Paths to Parenthood, we did a recent webinar with Vasanti on why telling matters, which is amazing. I mean, we had over 600 people, I think, sign up. Becky,
we did.
To that.
Yeah.
And Vasanti's done a lot of work around disclosure within donor-conceived families. So Vasanti was at this pre-Congress course as well and did an amazing presentation around that subject. But I actually asked Vasanti, if there was one thing that she could share with parents, what would it be? And this is what she had to say.
Well, I think one of the things that our research has shown over the decades that we've been doing it is that actually what matters for the child is supportive parenting and warmth and all the things that matter for all families, really, in terms of how the children do. So I'd probably want to share that message, really, is to just remember that, you know, regardless of the family structure or the way in which the children are born, it's really what matters is what's happening in those families once the child arrives.
So that was really interesting to hear what Vasanti had to say about the importance of supportive parenting, regardless of the family structure. And I think for me, that resonated so much. I think even as someone who found out very late in life that I was donor conceived, I think the support that I've had from my dad after that disclosure, although it was very, very difficult time for us as a family to work through, my dad has been beyond supportive in me processing that, I think. So yeah, that was really lovely to hear from Vasanti, and it really resonated a lot with me, Becky. Like we've had conversations about that before, but I think there's lots of things we can't control as parents, but we can control being supportive towards our kids, can't we?
Absolutely. And it was really interesting to hear the thoughts of the same questions from Sophie and Astrid as well, which I think we're going to share now and then we'll reflect back on.
Yeah, so this is a clip firstly from Sophie around what her advice would be for parents.
Yeah, I think probably my one piece of advice would be make sure that you're listening to the perspectives of those who are donor conceived. I don't think that was always historically the case. I'm not sure the researchers as well necessarily always did that particularly effectively. I think there's been a bit of a sea change. We're seeing much more interest in learning more about the variability in donor conceived people's experiences. And I think that's enormously valuable.
So yeah, we just heard from Sophie there about her thoughts around advice for parents around listening to the voices of those that are donor conceived. And interestingly, in Sophie's talk at ESHRE, one of the questions that came up in the Q&A after her presentation One of the people watching asked her thoughts around terminology. So like what terminology should we use for the donor, for donor conceived people, et cetera, donor siblings, whatever it may be. And actually Sophie had probably one of the best responses I think I've heard, in the sense that she said, if you listen to my presentation, I actually changed the language I use throughout. So Sophie was talking about the research, for example, from the young adults study. And she actually made the point that, you know, for example, donor conceived people use lots of terms to refer to the donor as, whether it's the donor, my genetic father, genetic parent, donor dad, whatever it might be. And actually, I thought it was quite a clever way of, through her presentation, using those different terms through her presentation to show that variability. So yeah, that was just a really interesting thing that I noted from the day.
That's also interesting that even though she was using various terms, you still all understood what she was actually talking about. So it shows that, yeah, it doesn't lose any meaning by changing a different term. That's really interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And I just thought it was a really clever way of explaining a point, you know, in real sort of practical terms of how she did the presentation. And like I say, we also asked Astrid her thoughts around things that she would like to share for parents. And Astrid actually gave a really insightful talk around how to counsel recipient parents who are using donor treatment to have families. She's got a lot of experience in that area herself. And this is what Astrid had to say.
Try to feel comfortable with your family.
I think that
is my main point. It is scary. It is tricky. You might feel uncomfortable about it. That is okay. But feel okay to talk about it so that you become comfortable with, so that your children become comfortable.
And what Astrid said there is just so relevant for everything that we try and do within Paths to Parenthood, isn't it, Hayley? It's just about trying to make sure that as parents, we feel more comfortable in our own story so that we can talk to our children about their story. I think it is so important to make sure that people are feeling more comfortable around this, and that's exactly why we do what we do.
Yeah, and it's not an easy process. We've said this so many times. I think it isn't an easy process to feel confident and comfortable in, whether that's talking to your children or wider friends and family, and it all comes together, doesn't it? And like I say, it was quite validating to hear that from Astrid, I think, around how important that is for families. Because essentially, like Becky said, that's what we try to do. And still learning about, actually, aren't we? We're still learning about how best to do that, and the importance of, say, professional counselling support, like through collaborations that we have with, like, Julianne from Parenthood in Mind and Avi Perlman, who's a child psychologist, and the work that they do on a kind of one-to-one basis, but also the kind of wider support options through peer-to-peer support and sharing information, etc. So that was really helpful. So yes, thank you so much to the researchers there. And one of the last things that I actually asked them, which is probably more of a selfish question for me because I'm just interested in research in general, but I kind of put it to all three individuals if they were able to do any research project with any budget. I know a little bit unrealistic, but yeah, we can dream. What research question would they pick if they had any choice and free rein to do when it comes to donor conception? And what we had was a real range, actually, of questions. So I suppose that shows that there's still lots of work to be done in this area. But yeah, let's have a little listen to what Sophie would like to focus her efforts on if she had the opportunity to.
It's a great question. It's also a really hard question because we never get unlimited budget, and we're always trying to cut the budget down to kind of make it cut the work down to make it fit the budget. But I think the thing that I'm most interested in, and it's something that we try to do with the young adult study, was to look at the strengths and the challenges associated with being donor conceived. And we found both. So we found sort of that some donor conceived people had more kind of pride in being donor conceived and others kind of experienced more stigma. And I have to say, I'm particularly interested in what fosters pride in donor conception. I have a suspicion that it might be more prevalent in families headed by same-sex female couples. And because I know, like, there's quite a bit of literature on those families, particularly from the US, where you see greater resilience against things like homophobic stigmatization. You see kind of the ways in which, lesbian mums do great parenting kind of against the odds and against a kind of stigmatizing context. But what I'm particularly interested in is how they also foster a sense of pride in being donor conceived. So like one donor conceived person I spoke to whose been raised by 2 mums, said that she has like a donor day, which is like not her birthday, it's the day of her conception, where they have like a cake and they say thanks to the donor. And I just thought that's an amazing story about how they celebrate the donor in that particular family. And I wonder if there are more stories like that that we could learn from. So I'd like to do a big project on pride. Yeah, I think that would make me very happy.
I think that's a really interesting topic, because I think there's been a lot done around the topic of shame. And actually, it'd be really interesting to almost flip that and say, what is it that encourages pride in somebody's donor conception story? And what can we learn from that? And what can we take from that? So, yes, I would be a big supporter of that research, Sophie. I think it's really, really important. And then I think you asked the very same question to Astrid. So let's have a listen to what Astrid had to say.
What I think that maybe I'm influenced by today is the process of talking, not the telling. So it's going further down. It's the talking. How do we talk? What questions come up? How do we give meaning to genetics? And how that evolves, and how that evolves when your child is not a toddler, but a teenager and an adult and having their own family. I think we need to get more insight in how that just changes over time. We're only focusing on telling how your family is formed. How is that evolving? How is that story within your family kind of developed or kind of co-created with your children?
So yeah, this is one I think that Becky and I have talked a lot about actually, which is really interesting that Astrid has also picked up on it, in the sense that there is lots of research out there around disclosure and the importance of doing so with our children from a young age and the telling. But actually, what are the intricacies of the talking part? So we talk about storybooks and things like that. And there has been some research to do with the Donor Conception Network's books, actually, that show that introducing storybooks to young families and parents actually increases the parents' confidence. So we do have some research out there that confirms that those processes are helpful. But I think actually there isn't a lot once you go beyond that in the talking and the real, like I say, the details of like devil in the detail, really, isn't it? And it's really, I think, quite an important point that Astrid's raised around, yeah, let's really start looking now at the talking phase. And I think Becky and I, like from a real personal level, with our kids getting older and our membership now growing with us as we do, more and more people are asking, like, how do you develop these conversations and where do we kind of go next with it, isn't it, Becky? It's quite an interesting one.
Absolutely, because, I mean, we always say there's no script for this process. It's all built around relationships, isn't it, with your children. And you can start with a storybook as a script, but then where do you go from there as their understanding evolves? And I think I only recently shared an example of a conversation I had with one of my daughters, Lena, about girls, and then how that led into a very, very quick conversation as we talked about how she was made. And it is really important to go beyond that initial telling. It is a continued conversation, and it's how you build on that conversation as well. So it'd be really interesting to see if we're able to have more research around that, what we could learn from that as well.
Yeah. And actually, as part of the pre-Congress course on that day, there was a lady called Patricia Hirschbercher. I'm not sure she's a doctor or professor, so one of the two, I'm assuming. But she's actually a lady from the US who was a fertility nurse originally and did a lot of work with both donors and those going through donor treatment. And she is in the process of developing what's called the TELL tool. And Becky and I actually, I think it was about maybe even 2 years ago, I think, spoke to Patricia, didn't we? And had a lovely conversation with her about the development of that tool specifically for US patients and intended parents and parents of young children. And she did give a presentation about how it's going. But again, it was quite interesting because we weren't really told much about the processes, what the TELL tool was. But I think actually that kind of research, I'm hoping, will kind of more kind of blend into actually the talking part as opposed to just the kind of the telling and the disclosure part. So yeah, that's definitely one to look out for, I think, because I think they're hoping to have some of the results of the next phases of those the TELL tool research coming out soon. And then lastly, the lovely Vasanti, we asked her thoughts as well. Bear in mind, Vasanti is probably one of the most long-standing researchers in donor conception, has done some incredible research globally, as have the others. So I was really interested actually to hear what Vasanti would like to focus on. Let's have a little listen to what Vasanti had to say.
I think what I would love to do, if there was no issues around budget, would actually be doing studies in multiple countries to understand sort of cultural context, but also to following up the families over time, because we understand that longitudinal studies are really important. And then just sort of, yeah, longitudinal studies, I guess, with larger numbers of people, I guess, is probably what I would say. But they are very expensive and it's probably very unlikely.
Yeah, and this is one that I would love to see more of. Whether or not it will be through my lifetime, I don't know. But actually the more longitudinal based research. So really looking at all the way from kind of conception all the way into kind of late adulthood, the kind of reflections and impacts of donor conception on not just donor conceived people, but, you know, the wider family network. And if you are interested, like I say, whilst we could always do with more longitudinal research, there is an amazing piece of very much that, which was a US study. They refer to it as the largest, longest running prospective investigation of American lesbian mothers and their children. So the NLLFS.org. And they actually literally have tracked families. And it's not just the insights of the parents, which traditionally has been the case with a lot of research in donor conception, but they actually have now had a number of studies at different time points with donor conceived children all the way through to adulthood and what their thoughts and feelings are around being donor conceived. And it is, like I say, one of the most well-known longitudinal research studies into donor conception. So we'll put that in the show notes because that is a really interesting piece of research that has spanned several decades. And they've done lots of offshoot kind of research questions from the bulk of the research participants. So yeah, definitely have a little look at that.
And I think the other one that I'm aware of is the one conducted by Susan Gollenbach's team. I think that was the University of Cambridge, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And I know Susan brought out a book called We Are Family. We actually have a recorded webinar with Susan on Paths to Parent Hub as well. And that study followed donor-conceived families throughout the course of, I think, to sort of see where people were telling and how those relationships had formed. So again, another one to have a look at, but these pieces of research take a long time, don't they? And I think we both agree that there needs to be more research out there around these families, because I mean, if you think back to the birth of IVF, it's only 47 years ago, we're still in quite the early stages of different ways in which families are formed. And so it does require that research. And I think that's one of the things that I think came across, I think if we were thinking back about ESHRA as a whole, is that it really does matter to keep amplifying these lived experiences as the science moves at such fast speed. And I think this is what we've heard multiple times, I think reflected on, that science has moved so fast, whether it be fertility treatment or whether it be DNA testing, that the laws and the kind of advice and the support hasn't really caught up. And that's not great for those with that lived experience. So parents need that support to really understand the complexities of this path, but also what they can do to best support their children. And the best way of getting that advice is through research and really understanding the not just the medical side of this, but the psychology as well. And I think that's what we would love to see more of. And hopefully in London next year, we will see more of.
Yeah. And like, I think the introduction of AI, which has just come into every part of our lives, isn't it? Not just in this space, but I think we saw that a lot at ESHRA as well. And I think also for me, it's kind of the impacts of donors as well. I think they often get forgotten about. I know we have focused a little bit more around donor conceived individuals and the parent support, but I do think we are starting to see obviously a lot of research into donors themselves and their experiences. And certainly, as you say, as the science has moved on, direct to consumer DNA testing and all of those things and the law changes, what are the impacts of that on the donors and their families as well moving forward? And because they all interrelate, don't they? You know, a parent isn't dealt with in isolation to the donor conceived person, the donor conceived person isn't in isolation to the donor, etc. So it's really important that this research is ongoing. And I just want to take the time to thank, like I say, Sophie, Astrid and Vasanti for just taking time out of a really busy schedule to speak with me. Like I say, shoving a little microphone in their faces and saying, can I record you, please? They're very patient with me. So I just want to thank them again. And yeah, maybe we'll have them on at some point in the future, because we always love speaking to the researchers because they have so much to bring as well. And I think it's sometimes helpful to speak to them because they don't always have, apart from being researchers, they've not really got personal sort of skin in the game, if you know what
There's
I mean.
There's no bias, is
no.
there? It's it's somebody looking from the outside in a way, and being able to really delve a bit deeper, probably ourselves would have our own biases around our own lived experiences. So no, I think that's really important. And yeah, big thank you to them. And I think it's, even though it's a slightly different episode, this one, where we are talking about this huge medical conference, I think it's really interesting for people, and hopefully you found it interesting to understand a little bit more about what goes on behind the scenes. And also for us as advocates in this space, how we are trying to get our voices heard and really get in the room with the right people and try to influence wherever we can the support that's available for families who are built in this way. So yeah, I think that brings us to the end of this series, doesn't it, Hayley? And we've already got plans for the next series, but we just need to have a look at timings. Thank you so much to everyone who has listened, and if you have been able to take the time to rate and review, if you haven't, please do, because it really helps other people find us. And this is a great free resource for anybody who is considering donor conception, or maybe now in the midst of donor conception as their path to parenthood. So yeah, that's it from me. Hayley, any final words before we wrap up?
I think that was it. And just thanks for everyone for listening. It's always great to get feedback, which we do get around the podcast. And we had one really recently, didn't we? So yeah, just thank you for listening. And just thanks once again for the support of season 3 from TV Edwards, not only obviously supporting us being able to get this podcast out into the world, but also providing us with some really important legal insight, I think, alongside donor conception. So we've had the lovely Anis Mathias with us from TV Edwards, giving us those legal insights on previous episodes. So if you haven't listened to those, definitely recommend you have a little listen back, because there's some really important information there from the legal side. So yeah, it's been great, Becky. Another season down. And like I say, we're already ahead planning now for season 4. So yeah.
We'll see you soon.
See you soon. Take care, everyone.
Bye. A huge thank you to TV Edwards for supporting this episode. TV Edwards are a top-ranked, award-winning law firm named in the Times Best Law Firms 2025. Their family law department is ranked among the UK's top 20 and known for their expertise in family law with a compassionate, client-focused approach.
They lead in modern family law, supporting clients through surrogacy, donation and co-parenting. Their solicitors have shaped landmark cases for many diverse families.
And with TV Edwards, families gain more than legal support. They find a trusted partner for their journey ahead. If you're enjoying the podcast conversations, you can find even more as part of the Paths to Parenthood membership community.
We know that navigating donor conception and alternative paths to parenthood can feel overwhelming, isolating, and let's be honest, a bit scary at times.
And that's exactly why we created Paths to Parenthood. It's a safe, supportive space for people on donor conception journeys, whether you're at the beginning, trying to decide, going through treatment, or already a parent.
Inside the hub, you'll find over 90 hours of on-demand expert webinars, honest real-life stories, monthly opportunities to ask questions of our resident psychologists, private support groups, and a community of people who really get it.
We're here to support parents and parents-to-be, so they're in the best possible position to support their future children with confidence and openness.
So if you're looking for guidance, connection and compassion, come join us at pathstoparenthood.com.
Because every path matters, we'd love to welcome you there. Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please do take a moment to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't forget our free resources, including our recent webinar, Why Telling Matters, our friends and family resource, and lots more via our website.
So do come and join us in the Paths to Parenthood membership. We'd love to see you there.
Until next time.